Welcome to the walkthrough for problem set 7 for CS50 Finance. This is a really fun problem set. You're going to implement your own finance game. So you can actually send this to your friends and have your friends buy and sell stocks and compete for who can have the best portfolio at the end of the run. And it's a really fun problem set, but it also teaches you a lot. So it's going to teach you a lot about actually using PHP. And it's the first problem set that we're doing that's actually going to live on the web. So you're going to be able to send someone a link, and they won't have to SSH to terminal to be able to use your project. So this is a really cool problem set. You're going to be using MySQL databases, which are really cool and really useful in the future. A lot of what we learned today might also, and throughout doing this problem set, might also be useful to a lot of you for your final project. So we're finally getting into this realm of web programming, which may or may not be the reason why a lot of you are even taking this class. So really exciting. So let's dive right in, because there are a lot of functions that you're going to write. We're going to look at the distribution code throughout. This isn't just one agenda item, but throughout we're going to be talking about HTML, specifically XHTML and PHP. We're going to discuss MySQL, and then the programs that you actually have to write for this finance game to happen are: you have to allow your users to register. You have to allow your users to look up a quote from Yahoo Finance. That's another really cool thing about this problem set. You're using real data about stocks from Yahoo Finance. You have to allow your user to buy a stock, to sell a stock, and you have to log all their transactions and give them the history. You also have to manage their portfolio. So there are a lot of cool things that we're going to be going through today. So this is web programming, this is SQL, and this is what you're going to implement. The first thing we have to talk about whenever we do, is there something wrong with this?
I missed the previous slide. Could I capture it for a second?
Sure. Okay, thanks. So the first important thing we have to talk about when we talk about web programming is setting permissions for the files that you write. And David went over this in lecture, but every time you write a file, that doesn't automatically become readable to everyone on the web. So you have to set permissions for this file. So that's why we use chmod, so change mode, chmod. And we use this call in our terminal window when we want to change who can read, write, and execute our files. So for static content, so this means any file ending in .html, .png, all these listed right there. So everything that's not PHP, basically, for our purposes, has to be readable by others, and the owner has to be able to read and write it. So to have this effect, that's chmod 644, the name of the file. So that would be chmod 644 index.html, for example. Directories, so these are entire folders. So this is like public underscore HTML, which is a directory that each of you will create inside of your home directory. That has to be chmodded 711, because the owner has to be able to do everything. The owner has to be able to read, write, and execute, and everyone else has to be able to execute it. So everyone else gets a one. We'll go through actual breakdown of chmod on the next slide, but just so you know how we're chmodding things. And all PHP scripts need to be read and written just by the owner. So no one else is going to read or write your PHP script, and no one is going to execute the PHP script. So this you don't even have to chmod. If you did, it would be chmod 600, but you don't actually have to, because this is the default when you write a program, when you write a file. If you do ls-l in your directory, you'll see all the files that you have in that directory, and they'll all be set to read-write for the owner and nothing else. So that's chmod 600. So if you just want to allow one of your groups, so you have your owner, so that's you who wrote it. You have a group. So that group can be, for example, CS50. Or it can be a group of users on the web, however you define that group. And then you have everyone else. So you have the others. So for each of those groups, you have to decide if they can read, if they can write, and if they can execute. For one group to be able to read, you would write that as 100 in binary. And what's the value of that? 100 in binary. 4. And it's written right there. So 0, 1, 0, 2, And 001 would be 1. So if someone's allowed to read and write, that'll be 6. If someone's allowed to read, write, and execute, that's 7. If they can only read, that's 4, et cetera, et cetera. So this at the bottom, you don't really have to go through each one. Those are just examples of how you would come up with CMOD values or values for this, read, write, and execute. But these are sort of arbitrary and random just for the purpose of this exercise, but really you'll be using the ones we talked about. So you'll be using 644 for your HTML and stuff, and you'll be using 711 for your public HTML directory. So let's take a look at the distribution code. So we have index.php, which is your home page. So this is unrelated to CS50 Finance, index.php. Oh, sorry, this should be... There's an index.html that is unrelated to CS50 Finance, not to be confused with index.php, which is related to CS50 Finance. So index.html, as the problem set will walk you through, you're going to create your own home page. So you can put anything you want on this. This is purely for fun. You can put nothing if you don't have time. You can put a bunch of stuff if you actually want to use this for God knows what purpose. So really, from now until next year, around this time when other students start getting to use the cloud, you guys will have access to this. So once you create a website here, you can use this for the next year. And even after, I think you can ask CS50 to keep your domain on there. So this is a really cool thing that you have your own website. So that's index.html, not to be confused with index.php. Index.php is the home page for your user on CS50 Finance. So this is where, presumably, you'll have the person's portfolio for them. So this is where the user can go to their home page and see what their portfolio is. At the moment, the home page looks like this. So you guys are going to have to change that. So it's not much distribution code because obviously that's not how you're going to leave your person's homepage. But let's actually go into this directory in PSET 7 where I've copied all the files. So all the distribution code except for, so index.php, login.php, and login2.php, and logout, as you can see, are all inside just the general PSET 7 directory. But inside includes, you have a lot of other, make it bigger, sorry. You have a lot of other files as well. Okay, cool. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. So these are the files that we have. So let's look first at that index.php that I just mentioned. So as you can see, it uses this thing require once. So it requires once includes, which is the directory, /common.php, which is the file. So require once is kind of like include in C. And what it means is to actually copy and paste, well, figuratively copy and paste everything that's in this file, common.php, which is located in the includes folder, and put that inside of this file. So every time you go to this file, you need what's in common.php. It turns out that one of the things in common.php is to make sure that the user is registered and logged in. So if the user's not logged in, they can't see this page. Why? Because they don't have a home page if they're not logged in. They don't have a portfolio. They don't have anything. You don't know who they are. So what actually happens in common.php, which we'll look at next, is that the user gets redirected if they haven't logged in to the login page. So if right now you were to open your browser and go to your PSET 7 on the web, you wouldn't be able to see index.php because it'll automatically redirect to login until you've logged in. So the next thing you see is the HTML headers, so you always need to include that, and like we said in lecture, you don't actually need to memorize this whole link. You just have to be able to put it in, and you have to use the validator to make sure your HTML is valid, but that's more for your own homepage than this, which is pretty much already written. But again, you see the image is the under construction, so that's where you see right in this line, so you're going to want to change the image, right? And eventually you will have a user's portfolio here, but we'll get back to that once we've done some of the simpler functions. So that's let's actually look inside includes. And here we have, okay, so here we have a bunch of stuff. So let's start from left to right. So apology.php allows the user to apologize with, or the program to apologize with a message when something can't be done that the user wants. So this is sort of the setup for apologize, which is a function that you'll see later, which allows you to actually just send a message to your user that they're doing something wrong. So now we'll look into common.php, which is what is required at the top of index.php. So you see you're reporting all the errors. This is stuff that you'll want to go through. And you require once all these other files that we're about to look at. And then you make sure that the database is defined and that you'll be able to enter the MySQL database. And you make sure that you try to actually connect to the database. So this is that's what this line does. Okay, so that's common. And then that one itself included constants. So these constants are your database information, right? So you're going to have to, this is one of the first things you have to do in the problem set. You go to www.cs50.net/me, and there you're going to see your database, name, your database user, and your database password. Your database password will not be something like hello, like mine, because I changed mine. It'll be something like AB5392. It'll be something arbitrary. You can change it once you actually log in, but do make sure you change it inside constants.php thereafter. So you have to fill in these constants so that you're later able to log into the MySQL database. So that's what you do inside there. Then helpers.php has some useful functions. So this is the function apologize I mentioned, and it requires apology, but it's actually a function. So apology isn't the function. Apology is what the function is going to print out, but apologize is the actual function. So it takes a message. You can see that's a variable in PHP because it starts with a dollar sign, as we've seen. So you pass it a message, and then that'll be the apology. And this will open a new page that'll say, sorry, and your message. So your message can be something like, you can't buy that stock, you don't have enough money, for example. So that's where you would use that. Dump is a function that can be used to debug your code. So it'll print out the variable that you want. It'll print out whatever is in that variable at that time, but you shouldn't use this instead of when you want to actually print things to the user. This is purely for debugging purposes. So don't use this in your code, just use this to debug if you're having some problems and can't figure them out. And then this is logout to log out the user. Now a lot of this stuff is a little bit complicated. Sessions up here, this is a super global variable session, and all the files will understand it. And this is to keep track of whether the user is logged in or logged out. And we will get to that again when we look at login. This is lookup. This is a really cool function because it actually will query Yahoo, as you can see right here. So fopen is something familiar, but the way it's being used is certainly not familiar to us. But it queries Yahoo in order to find out the price of this stock. So it takes a stock symbol. So for Google, GOOG, for example, it'll take that as input, and it'll return all this stuff about the stock. So it'll return all this. So the symbol, the name, the price, the time, the change since the previous open, high, and low. And it'll return stock. Now, to understand what it's returning, we have to look at stock.php. So stock.php, this is a class in PHP, which is pretty similar to a struct in C. So we've seen this in, for example, Sudoku when we had the board struct. So this is what you're going to use every time you're dealing with a stock. So you can deal with the stock symbol, the stock name, the stock price, etc. So that's why we have that. So when that function before lookup returned a stock, it returned all of these aspects of the stock. So that's cool to know too. Okay, now let's look at, so a lot of distribution code here. So let's look at, I have to cd up one, and then let's look at login.php. So login is already written for you. So if you go to the login page and type a username and a password, you can log in. And we actually already have in the database a couple of users, as you can see here. So these are all users already in our database. I didn't put them in. They've been in here. I think this one's particularly funny. But you can log those people in and it will actually work because login has been written. So again, you see that it's requiring common, which in turn is requiring constants and helpers. So all that stuff is included at this point. And login, ironically, logs out whoever is logged in at the moment. So presumably, if someone logged in before and then they go to the login page, they presumably want to log in as someone else. So, and it's a different user, so you log out whoever's logged in right now. Again, you see the doc type header, and then you just have a simple table arrangement. So it looks more complicated than it is, but this is the same code you've seen in all of David's lectures with Frosh IAMs and stuff like that, because all this is doing is creating the form in order to log in. So you see the important parts of this are that the form action is login2.php. So that means that this code, when submitted, because of what's written here, is going to submit to login2.php. And then login2 is going to actually make sure that this login is valid, to make sure that the person does exist, that username exists, and that the password matches that username. So the method is post. Why is the method post, and what's the alternative? Good. So get is the alternative. Why is it post? Why are we using post? What's the difference between post and get? Chris?
One shows it in the URL.
Exactly. So get shows it inside the URL. So when you submit using the get method, whatever the user has just typed into the form will show up inside the URL. So this is like when you do a Google search, they're using the get method for your query. So your query will actually show up inside the URL. So it'll say google.com search, Q equals, and then your query, the actual string that you typed in. So in this case, we don't want the person's password to be inside the URL. So we use the post method. And then down here, you see input type submit, value equals login. So that means that when they click the submit button, it'll say login on it. So it'll say login on the submit button, and when they click it, it'll go to login2.php, because that's all the form. So the form opens here, doesn't close until all the way down here. What this is just a link, so ahref, this is just a link to the register page, so register.php. So that's if you want, that's just going to be a link that says, don't have an account, register. So you're going to want to remember this or copy and paste this in order to have links on the bottom of your other pages. So for example, if you're on the register page and for some reason you want to ask the user, wait, are you already registered? Do you already have a username? If so, log in. So that's how you will do those links. And that's login.php, pretty simple. Now let's look at login2.php, which is the back side of the operation. So login is the front side. Login is what the user will see when they go to the website. Login2 is what the user won't see. Login2 is what's actually being done. So, require one. So, very common theme. You'll probably be using it in yours. So, anytime you want your user to be logged in, you want to make sure that this is a logged in person. You have to require once this common.php. That's why we're seeing this trend, because all these things want the user to be logged in. So, now you see here this thing, MySQL real escape string. Does anyone remember from lecture what that is and why it's being used? Yeah. Right, so it checks that whatever the user typed in this form is not some sort of malicious input. So what could be malicious input? So there are these things called SQL injection attacks, where a user might know that you're using PHP code and that you're querying a SQL database, and they can actually put in SQL code into like the password field, for example, to make you unknowingly, thinking that they're just going to try to type their password, store this in a variable, use that variable somewhere in your code, and that the effect of using that variable is just like copying and pasting what they wrote into your own code. So they end up changing your script entirely. So they can do something like, if you wanted to delete your friend's Facebook, for example, and if Facebook wasn't careful with this kind of stuff, you could type into the login or password field on Facebook SQL code that will remove from the database. You'd have to know what their database was called, of course. There's more to it, but you would be able to remove everything about that user that you want from Facebook. which obviously is impossible because of things like this. So you want to escape whatever input the user put in. You don't want that just to go right into your code. You want to make sure you use this escape string so that you can differentiate it from your own code. So you store it in a new variable. And what you're running the MySQL RealScape string on is $_post and then username. This is because everything that the user has just submitted, we use the method post. Had we used the method get, this would have been $_get. And the reason we have username and password like this is because this is all in some sort of associative array. So now we can refer to the username portion of that array and the password portion of that array. And we can store those in username and password variables. Okay? So now, what do we want to do once we've stored those variables? So we know the user's username, we know their password, or what they say their password is, and now we want to check the database to make sure that that's true, so to make sure that that's actually them that's logging in. So we have down here, we prepare what our SQL request is going to be. So we say, we want to, so this is kind of, if you read it in English, it makes sense. It's select UID, which is the user ID, like our HUIDs, for example. So select user ID from users. Users is the name of the table that's already been created for you. So select user ID from users. So it's select what from what table. And then where is the conditions that you're going to place on it. So if you have no conditions, you just want to select the UID from all users, you would do select UID from users where 1, which just means always. So where 1, so where true, which just means that it'll do it always. But in this case, we want to make sure that we only select the UIDs of those users whose username is $username, right, the variable that we just created, and their password is $password. Okay, so we only want to query for that UID. And now, presumably, we can only have one person, or not presumably, but actually, we only have one person with each UID because the UID auto-increments. This is already set up for you. The UID auto-increments, so every user that registered gets the next available integer ID number. So no two people are going to have the same one. So then, every time you sort of prepare a string like this that's going to query the database, you haven't actually queried the database, right? You've just prepared your sort of statement for SQL. And then you actually have to execute that query. So that's why I have the next line, which is $result equals MySQL query, and then the string that you had before, right? In this case, in the variable SQL. You could have just put that entire string inside those parentheses. This is just for simplicity of understanding and reading. So this is kind of a more elegant way to do it. So you get the result of the actual query. Now you've gotten the results of that query, but you still don't really have anything that you can work with until you see actually how many rows that query resulted in, and you actually fetch those rows. So here you have to check, because you have to check that there was something returned, right? So if there was no one that had that username, then there's nothing to return, right? So you're going to get, your query is going to return null or zero rows. So you have to first make sure that there is a row. And in this case, there can only be one row because the UIDs are unique. So you ask if MySQL numRows of this result that I just asked for is equal to 1, then grab that row. So we grab that row by running row equals MySQL fetch array of the result. So this actually takes whatever SQL returned and puts it in an array for you. Okay? And that array right now is called row. And like $_post and $_get, this is an associative array. So you can refer to parts of this row array. So like, for example, right underneath, we have $row bracket, double quotes, UID. So this means the UID from that row. Please give it to me. Now, we only asked for the UID, right? Because in our select up here, we only asked for UID. Had we put a star here, an asterisk, instead of UID, we would have gotten the UID, the username, and the password. So we would have gotten everything. Star means everything. Then down here, we would have been able to refer to row username and row password, etc. And then once, so this line actually logs the user in. So again, this logging in bit is a little complicated, which is why you're not actually asked to do it. You just have to understand that this is the line that actually logs people in. So .session is the super global, again, that keeps track of whether a user is logged in or not. And then once they've logged in, you redirect them to index.php, because index.php is their homepage. If you are unable to log them in, so if nothing is returned, that means there was no user inside the table that had both the username that you typed in and the password that you typed in, then you have to apologize to the user. And this is an example of how to use the apologize function. Any questions on login, on the login functions? Okay. So login, as we can imagine, is extremely similar to register, right? Because login is very similar to register. And what the first thing you should actually do in writing register is to actually, in writing register is just to CP login into register. I think I have this next. Okay, so we'll get to it. But the next thing you want to do, the first thing you want to do in making register is to copy login into register and login to into register to. So the same way in dictionary, in the PSET5, you copied copy into resize and worked with that framework, you should do that again here. So we've gone over all of this distribution code, so you don't actually need to read this slide. And we've already talked about what features you guys have to implement. So we're going to start with user registration. In order to register our users, obviously we have to manipulate our SQL database. So logging into the database, we already talked about, you have to fill in your constants inside constants.php. On your end, so that's on the terminal end, so that's how terminal is going to communicate, or your scripts are going to communicate with SQL. The way you can just on your own communicate with SQL is by going to the website. So you can go to cs50.net/phpmyadmin, and it'll prompt you for a username and password, which is the same username and password that's on cs50.net/me for phpmyadmin. And phpmyadmin is written in PHP, as the name suggests, and it allows you to work with SQL. So this is the table that already exists for you. It's the users table. And as you can see, it's inside of, well, for me, Embryolic PSET 7, but it'll be each of your directories here. And you have the users table already done for you. So this is the structure of the table. This is browsing the table. So this is all the UIDs. As you can see, they increment on their own, all the usernames and all the passwords. This would delete them. This would edit them. So you can change people's names, change people's passwords. And also, this is really terrible, but if you have your friends actually playing with this game, they're going to put in passwords when they register, and then their passwords are going to show up here. If you're a nice person, tell your friend not to use the same password they use for, say, Gmail. David taught you how to spoof emails in lecture, so I think it's okay that I just told you that. You probably would have figured it out anyway. So then you can look at the structure of the table, and as you can see, there are three fields. So these fields are UID, username, and password, and they're types. So this kind of reminiscent of C programming. So you have ints and two chars, and these parentheses here mean the maximum characters that can be in any of them. The attribute of this int, for example, is unsigned. Doesn't really matter. For money, you're going to be using the decimal types. This is the kind of thing you play around with in SQL. Then you have this tab up here called SQL, and this actually lets you create these SQL queries. Now, the SQL queries are usually really just easy to create because they're pretty self-explanatory and similar in English, but it tells you what fields you can ask for, and it has the default here is select everything from the users table where one, so always, but you can use this tool here to create your own queries. You can also search the database, of course, but this is, you're going to use queries to do this. You're not going to go in and search the table yourself every time anyone goes to your website, so this is kind of unnecessary. Same thing with insert. You can insert new people into your table, but again, there's no sort of real need to manually do this other than just to play around with it and learn about it. That's the MySQL structure that we're going to be using. So we've already discussed this, but just as a recap, there are three steps, like in login2.php, to actually manipulating your tables on SQL. So these are three steps beyond like logging in and stuff. Those are preliminary steps. But these steps are actually with each call to MySQL. You have to create the query. So this is with words like insert and select and update and delete. And those are the main ones that we're going to be using. And then you actually get the result of that by calling the function MySQL query on the query that you just defined. And then you actually get the row by calling MySQL fetch array on the result. So it seems superfluous that you're using sort of three steps on every single attempt at manipulating the table, but you do need to do that. And then there's a reminder there that if you want to refer to any aspect of the row, so any field in the table, right, these are the fields in your table, you call row or whatever variable you use to store the result of MySQL fetch array and the attribute that you want or the field that you want. Okay. So, all right, register.php. So like I said, you copy login.php and login2.php into register.php and register2.php. Use CP for that. And then you have to do a couple of things to change it. So one thing you want to do is just in the HTML, you want to change the head title. So you don't want the title to be login, you want it to be register. Really simple, will take you half a second. Then you want to change login2.php to register2.php. This is referring to inside the form where we saw in login.php, the form action was login2.php because login submits to login2. But now register wants to submit to register2. So you have to change that. And you have to add another field to your form. So you don't just, this is all in register.php. You don't want to just ask them for their username and password. You want to ask them for their password twice. So this is obviously a copy and paste job, but you want to change the name of that field to a password two. So you have two different ones. You want the submit button to not say submit, but to say register. And you want to change the link at the bottom to be a link to log in and not to register. So this whole thing should take you minimal amounts of time, maybe 5 minutes. So this one's easy. Then we go to register2.php, and we have to do some checks. So in login, we checked if the username and password already existed. Well, obviously, that doesn't make sense here so much. So we need to check if any of the fields in the form were blank. So if the user didn't type in a username or didn't type in a password or didn't type their password a second time, that's not okay. We have to apologize to them using the apologize function. Or if password and password two don't match, so they type different things, you also want to apologize to them. And you can write your own messages for this stuff. So if all checks out there, then you want to insert into the table. So you want to insert, so this is sort of the three-step process, but the third step is a little augmented. But the first step is the same. So this is the actual line of code, presuming that your username is the same variable and your password is the same variable as in login2.php, which it will be since you've copied it. So this is the exact line of code. You want to insert into users, because your table is called users, into the username field, the password field, and cache field you haven't yet created, but you're going to have to create a cache field on your database. So as you play along with PHP MyAdmin, you'll see how to add fields to your table, and you'll add a cache field. And I guess the default is to give everyone $10,000. And you can change this as you like. You don't have to give everyone $10,000. But so now that we have this cache field, we have to insert into those three fields these three values. So the username, the password, those are variables. That's why they're in single quotes. And then $10,000, if that's how much money we want to give them. And as you can see, 10,000 is a decimal. Then you actually query the database. So queries aren't just to get information out of the database. They're also to put things into the database. So that's a common misconception, I guess. But the query just means that you're manipulating the database in any way. So MySQL query can return null if for any reason things went wrong. So if it does return null, then you want to apologize to your user again. And then this is the same thing that we saw before when we wanted to log in the user. So presumably right after they register, we should log them in, right? We shouldn't make them log in, so that's what this last line will do. The reason we don't have that third step of fetching the array is because in this case, we just put in an array, right? So we don't really want to fetch it and write about it. I mean, I guess we could tell them, you are now registered as like username, password, and you have this much money. So we could use it if we wanted to, but it's just not necessary here. So that's register2.php. The next, any questions about registering? Okay, so the next thing is we have to get quotes. This is from Yahoo, but luckily you guys don't have to deal with any of that. All you have to do is call the lookup function, basically. So again, you'll see these pairs of files. I think every single, except for maybe one, every other function, every other program that you write will be sort of in this pair. So you have quote.php and quote2.php. So quote.php is just a form. So this is really similar to login again, right? Because that's where you have that whole form structure. So feel free to CP it in. And you want, but again, you have to change the form action to be to quote2.php. And you want the method to, you can, the method can be post. I guess it can be get in this case. It doesn't really matter. But to keep it all uniform, let's just use post. And you obviously in login, you have two fields. And here you only have one. So edit that. And obviously, you don't want the button to say login. You want it to say get quote, et cetera, et cetera. So minor changes there, too. In quote two, you want to first get the symbol from quote.php. So again, we're using this MySQL real escape string to prevent dangerous, malicious input from our users, because we're so cynical, I guess. And we use $_post again. And the attribute that we want, or the field that we're asking for is symbol. It also happens to be the only field, but so we're getting that symbol inside the variable symbol, and then we can look up that single symbol actually on Yahoo Finance, and this is by calling the lookup function, and we can store that lookup in quote. Now, what type is lookup going to return? Who remembers? What type does lookup return? Struct, right? So if we're talking in C terms, this is like a struct. So it's going to return all the information that Yahoo has given it about this stock. So then the way that you manipulate that information is actually by intermingling PHP code and HTML. So the HTML part is the text around it, like a share of and currently costs. And then you open the PHP tag, which is the left angle bracket, question mark, and then you can type as much PHP as you want, and then you close it with question mark, close angle bracket. And the way that, and inside there you can put PHP code. So this is PHP code that prints, and then this is how you refer to the struct parts in PHP. So this is a class, it's not a struct. It's comparable to a struct in C, but in PHP it's called a class, and this is how you refer to parts of it. So it's a little bit confusing, I guess, because it looks like dereferencing a pointer, but just remember that this is the way to access elements of a class in PHP. So we have the dollar sign just because that's the normal way to deal with variables in PHP, and then the arrow, and then the part of the struct that you want. So in this case, you want the name of the stock, so a share of, and then the name, currently costs, and then the price. And that's all the quote function has to return, just so that the user knows how much their stock costs. Okay, so now this part we've done so far, we've only really needed our user's database and our lookup function. Now we're going to need new databases, right? Because we want to keep track of a user's portfolio, and we want to keep track of all their transactions so that we can report to them a history of their transactions. So in the portfolio, we need to keep track of the user's ID number, and well, the fields that we're going to have in there are the user's ID number, the symbol of each stock that they own, and the number of shares. Okay, now this table is all up to you. This is your design call. So you can add other features to this, but these are the minimal features that you need. So you need to be able to know what stocks they have and how many shares of each stock they have. So you're going to create this table, again, by playing around on PHP MyAdmin. You're going to create a new table that you can call portfolio or stocks or whatever you want, and it's going to have these fields. So UID, again, is going to be an integer, and the reason we have to have UID is because we want to be able to connect it in some way to our user table. So we're not actually connecting them, but by virtue of knowing that the UIDs are in the user table and in the portfolio table, we can make sure that we're dealing with the same user. So we can say, look up the stocks or select, right, whatever you want. So let's say select the symbol and shares from the table portfolio where UID is, and then some variable UID that you have from, let's say, whether they're logged in. We'll get to it, just as a preview of why we need UID in here as well. And then you need a history table that's or a transactions table, whatever you want to call it, that's going to keep track of all of the user's transactions thus far. So the fields here, I guess, are also the UID, because we always want to be able to make sure we know what user we're talking about and associating these things with. We want to know what the transaction was. Did they buy something or did they sell something? We want to know what shares, how many shares they bought. We want to know what stock it is. We want to know the price of the stock. And we want to know the date and the time of the transaction. And for date and time, there are actually functions that you can Google. So one of them is, I'll just tell you date. But to actually figure out how to use them, we should Google date and time PHP. And there's a lot of different ones depending on what format you want. So these are the two databases that you need to create in addition to the user's database. Clear? Okay, so after we have these tables, now we can enable our users to buy and sell. So this is probably the bulk of the function. So once you've written buy, sell is relatively easy, but this is the bulk of it. So here is the most important sort of part and the part that might be most time consuming. So buy.php is really simple. It's the same thing we've been doing, where you have a form and you ask the user what stock they want to buy and how many shares they want to buy. So it's just the two fields, and you're just going to change login.php to get that. Buy2.php is actually going to complete this transaction. So there are many things that need to happen here. One thing you need to know in order to be able to do this part is that if you refer to this super global $_session and then in brackets UID, in brackets and double quotes UID, that'll be the UID of the user that's currently logged in. Okay, so this is the UID that we want to look up in every single table that we use, right? So if we're dealing with our user and we want to look them up in the portfolio table, for example, we want to make sure that we're referring to this UID in particular. Okay, so we always want to, because our table isn't going to be, this is the table for the user one. This is his username. This is his password. These are all the stocks he has. This is how many shares he has of each. No, we're going to have one table that just has all the users. One table that has all of the stocks ever bought by any user, right? Any user's stocks are going to be in there. And one table that has any user's transactions, so anything that they've done. And these are all going to be coded sort of by this UID. So you're going to have a table where the UID section isn't auto-incremented anymore. Your users table, it is auto-incremented, but in your portfolio and history tables, your user ID is arbitrary. You know, it'll just be whatever user completed that transaction at that time. So it might be 2, 4, 2, 3, 9, 10, 11, 11, 12, 12, you know. So it can be whatever user completed that transaction. So the way that you then sort of sift through this is when you query the database for example, stock symbols, you want to make sure you're querying them for the user that you're dealing with right now. And the way you refer to that user is by using this line of code right here. Okay, so for buy, we have to do three things. We have to add this stock that they want to the person's portfolio. But again, this is sort of misleading because we're not adding it to this person's specific portfolio. We're adding it to this general portfolio table, but we're going to use the UID of this person. So you're going to know that it's this person who bought this stock. So this is an insert call to MySQL, so it's very similar to register2.php, but into the portfolio table, not the users table. So in register2.php, we inserted this new username and password into the users table, but here we're inserting this new stock and its price and the number of shares, or not its price, sorry. I misspoke, but for its symbol and the number of shares into the portfolio table. Second thing we want to do, we have to charge the user. So the user has $10,000, let's say, to start, and we have to update. So this is a call to update for the user table. So you're going to use like update, set, cache, and table equal to, and then some variable. But again, we'll get to it. So you have to update the cache on the user's account. And then you have to log that transaction into history so that you can later report it. So this is, again, an insert call into the history table of the transaction. Okay, so that's going to be a similar call as also in register2.php, but you're inserting different fields. So just remember the general structure of insert that we've seen already. Okay, so you have to look up, right, the stock that they want to buy because you need to know how much it costs, right, in order to be able to check if they can buy it. So let's say the variable S is going to contain this struct, that stock, and we're going to get that by using lookup. And then we want to just find out the cost of that stock. So we're going to go to the $S, which is our variable arrow price. And we're going to multiply that by the number of shares the user wanted. And number of shares here is what I personally called the variable that the string that the user typed in during buy.php as opposed to buy2.php in the form when they put how many shares they wanted to buy. I used MySQL real escape string and stored it into a variable num shares. So you want to multiply how many shares they want with the price of the share, and that'll be the cost. And this line right here, user row equals MySQL fetch assoc of user, where user is selecting the user ID from the database, will give you everything about the user, where user is the line where you select the user from the database. And then you want to check if the user row cache is less than the cost. That means the amount of cash that they have in their portfolio or at their disposal is less than the amount that this transaction is going to cost. You can't allow it, so you have to just apologize. Otherwise, you're going to update users. So it's update what? Which table? The users table. How do you want to update it? You want to set cash equal to cash minus, that should say cost, not money. That's my typo, so fix that in your notes. Cash minus the cost of the stock, because I thought that cost was a more understandable variable than money, where user ID equals percent D, comma, user ID. Right, so you're going to have to, I actually cut off a part of it. This whole line is a big typo. But it's actually going to be an sprintf, which is why you have the double quotes at the end. So it's going to be sprintf, open parenthesis, double quote, and then this line. And then you close the double quotes, and then you have user ID as the variable. So this is the way that we put in variables into our SQL query. Right, because user ID isn't always going to be the same. I can't just say where user ID equals 1. So I have to say that user ID equals an integer here, or a digit, and then you substitute that variable in with a sprintf. So I'll change this on the slides, but just if you're taking notes now, make sure you change that in your notes. So that's how we're going to ask for, that's how we're going to ask the table to update the amount of money the user has. Now, we want to sell stocks as well, so this is extremely similar to buy, so we won't go into it as much, but you have to check if the user owns the stock, right? So in this case, you don't care how much money they have, you're not doing that check, but you're doing the check to see if the user actually owns the stock, and if they do, then this is a good example of how to actually use the sprintf. So you use sprintf, and then you say the command, and at the end, you see you have these variables. And again, these variables, the UID is the user's ID that we defined before, and symbol to sell is what I personally named whatever the user typed in inside the form during sell.php. And these lines of code go in sell2.php. Then you want to refund their money. So you want to look up the price of the stock in their, you want to look up the price of the stock, which is in their portfolio, right? So if they want to sell it, we first check that it's in their portfolio. We don't have the price in their portfolio, but we have the stock symbol, and we have the lookup function that will return a stock struct that has the price of the stock in it. So we have to look up whatever symbol we get from the portfolio, and then we want to look up the price of that stock, multiply that by the number of shares that they have, which is listed in their portfolio, and refund them that money back. So that's with an update call again. Then we want to log this transaction in the history table by inserting these values into the history table. Now, the history table. So all we want to do, history is the one that doesn't have two functions, that doesn't have two programs, it just has one. So it just has history. And what you history.php, and all it does is when the user goes to history.php, it will query the database for all the history that is for that user. So it's going to select all from transactions, which is the name of the table in my case, where the UID is the UID variable that we keep referring to. Now, in this case, unlike some other cases maybe, you're going to be getting more rows than just one, right? You're not just asking for one username, right? You're asking for all the transactions this user has ever done. So the way that you refer to these then in order to print them out is with a while loop. So for example, if I just wanted to print the symbol of whatever transaction they did, then I would say while my variable row, which equals MySQL fetch array of the result, and result is just MySQL query of the history variable, right? So these are back to our three steps that we want to make sure we're really clear on. And so while I'm getting rows, so while the rows still exist, I'm going to print these things out. So if only one row exists, this will only execute once, obviously twice if there are two rows, etc. And in this case, I only printed the symbol, so $row bracket symbol in our associative array, but you can print everything that's in that array, right? So you can print anything that's in the history table. So you can print the time, and you can print the date, and you can print whether it was bought or sold, and whatever. These are all, you know, calls based on your individual table that you've created. Index, yeah, question.
Are we still using printf in PHP, or is it print?
Well, I think you can use, the question was printf versus print. So in this case, we have print. I think printf would still work if you had a variable. Right, so the reason we were using printf is because we were printing variable amounts in terms of, we would have a string, right, and then we would put %d somewhere in it, the same way I just used sprintf, right? But in this case, we just have this one variable. We're not putting text in there as well. So we really just need print. But, you know, they're relatively interchangeable. So this is how you would print that out in the index function. So index.php, which you're going to change from the under construction that it's at right now, is basically exactly the same thing, except not from the history table, but from the portfolio table. Because on index.php, you want to show the user their portfolio. So in that one, you're going to be querying the portfolio table, not the transactions table, and you're going to print out the fields that are in that table, which will be symbol and number of shares. So that's index.php. Any questions before we wrap up? Okay, so some sort of checks when you think you're done. Make sure your site works on multiple browsers. So you're required to have your site work on two browsers, two of the major browsers. These are listed in the problem set, but don't forget to do this because, you know, some people it'll work in Firefox but not in Safari or vice versa. Just make sure you have it working in two, and you might have to notify your TF which one it works in. So these aren't things you can really control very well, but to the best of your ability. And you have to make sure that you're always checking the input that's coming in. Make sure that people aren't asking to sell negative shares, to buy negative shares. Make sure that, you know, there are no fractions involved. So make sure you do all these little checks. And make sure you check that MySQL query is not null every time you use it. And if it is, you have to apologize to your user. I think that's pretty much it for me, unless there are any questions about using this. Play around with MySQL. That would be my first suggestion, to make sure you know how to manipulate these tables. And look through the distribution code one more time. But good luck. I'll see you next week. Signing off.